Action causes reaction.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. A bevy of economic indicators are out and markets are responding just 20 minutes into trading. The government says retail sales fell by more than 1% in March, led by car sales and electronics. And wholesale prices also fell, with energy leading the way. So people are buying less and spending less. And less seems to be the word on Wall Street. Dow is down about 1.5%, 122 points at this hour. The Nasdaq down nearly 1%. And the S&P 500 down about 1.5% as well, about 12.5 points. European shares are up at this hour. Asian markets were mixed. All right, we're going to talk to Bernard Baumol, the managing director at the Economic Outlook Group this morning. Mr. Baumol, let's talk about these economic reports.
Overall, yes, the retail sales numbers were disappointing. However, I think we've got to keep in mind that the March numbers were higher than January, and February itself was revised upwards as well. So I think we just have to take it as one month that's bad. But this month, the month of March, should not be interpreted as a significant setback for the economy.
Let's talk a little bit about that positive news that you were mentioning. We're getting good news on the earnings front this morning. Johnson & Johnson with better-than-expected numbers. Yesterday it was Goldman Sachs. Where's the love on Wall Street there?
Well, you know, I think right now the market's probably reacting initially to the retail sales numbers, but I would expect by the end of the week we will get some better earnings report. And the most important sector that Wall Street will be watching, of course, will be the earnings in the financial sector. And you're right. We had yesterday some surprisingly good news in profits from Goldman Sachs. This week we'll get the Citigroup and J.P. Morgan Chase. So everyone's going to be keeping an eye on these companies. Keep in mind that it was only about a month or two ago when people were worrying that the government's going to have to take over a lot of these financial institutions. And now things seem to have turned around to some extent, and we're actually seeing these financial companies begin to register some profits. And that is, you know, the first stage of a recovery for the financial sector. So we may get some good news later this week, and I expect the market to react accordingly.
All right. Bernard Baumol, the managing director at the Economic Outlook Group, thank you for joining us this morning.
Anytime.
President Obama today discusses the economy in a speech at Georgetown University. We're expecting more in the way of a government status update than any presidential pep talk. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
President Obama will tout signs of economic life, such as a spike in mortgage refinancing and a rise in loans to small businesses. He'll also remind the country that further pain is on the horizon. Christina Romer chairs Obama's Council of Economic Advisors. She spoke this morning to NBC's Today Show.
We know we've got several more months of job loss, for example. We know that the numbers on GDP are almost surely going to be very bad for this quarter and next.
Consultant Peter Cohen says Obama's walking a rhetorical tightrope.
He has to be simultaneously realistic and sensitive to the pain of people who are suffering. At the same time, he needs to avoid having Americans give up and panic and feel that there's nothing that can be done.
With the speech, Obama wants to renew confidence in his efforts to stabilize the housing and credit markets and to improve regulation of banks. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Listening to The Morning Report on Tuesday, April 14th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Thai anti-government protesters ended a three-week siege of the prime minister's office today. That's eased fears for the time being that prolonged turmoil would further damage the economy, a climate there that's seen better days. Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports.
Last year, Thailand made more than $15 billion from tourism. Thai authorities say this week's violence could cut that by a third.
I think they're being very conservative.
Peter Yesowich provides marketing services to the travel industry.
When these kinds of situations arise, it's remarkable how quickly the system will shut down. And people who have travel plans are increasingly prone to postpone or cancel those.
About 2 million people work in tourism in Thailand. Southeast Asian expert Rosalind Morris says many are middle-class folks, already hit by the global recession. Still, she says the country knows how to rebound.
Thailand is probably the most efficient country in the world at managing its image.
So when the protests end, she says, Thailand will waste no time in cleaning up and starting a PR campaign to lure travelers back. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
CSX is the first of the big U.S. railroads to report quarterly earnings, with almost all shipping down significantly. Today's announcement should offer a glimpse of how America's railroads are adjusting their networks to this economic fallout. Joel Rose reports.
If freight trains look shorter to you these days, it's not your imagination. Rail carriers are hauling 20% fewer cars than they did a year ago.
There's less consumer demand, so you're seeing less commodities being shipped, less materials being shipped, and all of that's weighing on the railroad sector.
Charles Rotblut is an analyst for Zacks.com. He says that's one reason why Wall Street has scaled back its predictions for CSX and other railroad companies. Lee Klaskow is an analyst with Longbow Research. He expects first quarter numbers to be bad. What Klaskow wants to know is what CSX management predicts for the second quarter and beyond.
As manufacturing builds and as inventories start building again, a lot of that is going on the railroad. So, you know, the rails tend to move 3 to 6 months before the overall economy does.
For his part, Klaskow doesn't expect volume on the railroads to start picking up steam until the beginning of 2010. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
And of course, for the sake of full disclosure, CSX happens to be one of our underwriters. United Airlines is in the midst of negotiations with many of its labor unions. It'll meet today with a union representing its mechanics. It's renegotiating contracts that were agreed to during its bankruptcy 3 years ago. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
Last year, it was astronomical fuel prices dogging the airline industry. Now it's a demand problem, and that hits the big carriers like United the hardest. Seth Kaplan of Airline Weekly says both sides are in a difficult position as negotiations get underway.
United's going to say, look, fuel is falling, but demand is also really falling, and we don't know where things are going. We don't have enough visibility to know that we're going to have the revenue to be able to give you the kinds of compensation that you want.
United slashed employee pay and benefits during reorganization, and Kaplan says workers are through making sacrifices for the good of the company, even if there's a promise of rewards in the future.
United just can't do that kind of thing. Employees are going to look to take whatever they can get right now because they just don't trust that management later is going to take care of them.
Still, Kaplan says a strike is unlikely, and given the current job market, workers may have to endure another delay. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
One of South Africa's top industries is diamond mining, but the recession has put a crimp in demand for a girl's best friend, particularly here in the United States. As Gretchen Wilson reports from Johannesburg, that has mine owners and miners looking for ways to return some of the lost luster.
At Inner Gems Jewelry Store in downtown Los Angeles, the glass cases are stocked, but foot traffic is well down. Proprietor Steve Feng says business has seldom been so bad.
The only thing that I can compare it to was that sales were really down after 9/11. People, you know, are not as willing to part with their money as they used to. That's 100% fact. People don't have the disposable income like they used to.
The U.S. has long been the main market for diamonds, but Americans are now pinching pennies, and that's taken the shine off the entire global diamond industry. John Bristow is CEO of Rockwell Diamonds in Johannesburg.
The diamond industry, like every other mineral commodity in the world, has taken a hit, and quite a substantial one, courtesy of the credit crunch.
Since Americans aren't buying diamonds, jewelry stores have lots on hand, so they're not buying new diamonds from auctions in New York, which means the auction houses aren't buying from diamond polishers in India, who in turn aren't buying the rough diamonds that come out of the ground here in South Africa. Rockwell Diamonds has had to lay off hundreds of people, cutting its workforce by a third.
It's not a particularly pleasant situation, but you know, it's an economic necessity at this point in time.
Even South African mining giant De Beers is halting some of its operations. Spokesman Tom Tweedy insists, however, that streamlining in recent years will keep De Beers alive.
So while the challenges are real and enormous, they are not challenges we cannot overcome. We're fit for business.
Thousands of miners have lost their jobs, but the reasons are so clear, Even the National Mine Workers Union isn't putting up much of a fight. Lesiba Sashoka is the union spokesman.
Unfortunately, it's a dire situation. There's nothing that we can do.
Nothing directly, at least. They can only hope the global recession will lift and that Americans will start spending on diamonds again. I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
It's been about 6 months since Marketplace went on a journey, looking to find out if the economic fallout had set this country on the road to ruin. This week, Tess Vigeland and Amy Scott are back on the road, following up with some of the people they met along the way. And Amy filed this dispatch from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Almost every morning, this group of mostly senior citizens gets together for coffee at a Panera Bread in Charlotte. When I visited last fall, the Dow had dropped below 11,000, and Bob Brown was feeling thankful he'd sold all his stock just after the peak. Now that the Dow has crept back above 8,000 points, he's wondering if he should start buying again.
If I go back into the market, it'll be tiptoeing because I'm afraid of the bear trap, you know. So much bad news on the horizon, I think we got to play it very carefully.
Across the table from Brown, Jane Francisco is even more cautious. She's a retired teacher. She's lost more than $20,000 in retirement savings.
We just have it in a bank account right now. And that's where it's going to stay until I'm really sure that this is on an upward swing.
And by sure, she means she's got to see the market rebound for more than a few weeks. In Charlotte, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And you can hear more from Amy's visit to Charlotte this evening on Marketplace. No doubt the economic fallout has hurt many charities. Philanthropists and foundations have been cutting back on giving. But some donors are doling out more because of the weak economy. Here's Marketplace's Jeff Tyler.
Last fall, after a really bad day on the stock market, a small foundation in Illinois received a letter. It was addressed to its CEO, Sarah Shostak.
Dear Sarah, we are pleased to commit $1 million to the Community Works Initiative at the Evanston Community Foundation.
The anonymous million-dollar donation will help low-income kids attend preschool. And the donation allows the foundation to increase the amount it gives away in grants. But most organizations aren't so lucky. In the last half of 2008, donations of $1 million or more fell by a third. Yet demand for assistance has been climbing. At this Pittsburgh food pantry, volunteers pass out bags of groceries. Grant Oliphant, CEO of the Pittsburgh Foundation, sees more people he describes as the new needy.
It's folks who have never before had reason to believe that they would find themselves in need of assistance with food or shelter or transportation.
Pittsburgh charities have raised about $1 million to create a new fund to help people hurt by the downturn. But Oliphant says many nonprofits themselves need emergency assistance.
The concern is that some of these nonprofits will go out of business. It is immensely difficult to replace them once they're gone.
To help keep projects afloat, some philanthropists are giving more. Hedge fund manager Ken Nickerson founded the EOS Foundation to fight poverty in the greater Boston area. Last year, the endowment lost about 40% of its value. So Nickerson and his wife donated an extra $10 million.
We had more money than we needed, and the foundation had less. And so we actually transferred about a quarter of our wealth over to try and help recapitalize the endowment.
Nickerson says studies show the very wealthy often give about 2% of their income to charity. He challenges the rich to ask themselves, how much money do I really need, and how can I give more? In Los Angeles, I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Finally, Rachel Romanek of Reno, Nevada, didn't want to go out Sunday night, but she was persuaded by a friend to check out a casino near her house. Just a few minutes into her gambling at the Terrible's Megabuck slot, she hit the jackpot worth more than $33 million. Romanek says she owes a lot to her friend who talked her into going out in the first place. I'm sure she has a lot of new friends today. Hey, you've got a friend in Scott Jagow, our online blogger. He's at marketplace.org. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Tuesday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.